People are actually losing their homes and asking to rent in our apartments.
The biggest obstacle is, of course, lack of funds.
We think we've helped 58,000 people.
We're constantly having a greater demand for affordable housing.
Welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing.
As millions of children return to school, we're reminded that it does indeed take a village to raise a child. Hi, I'm Joanne Green, and on this episode of the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing, we'll look at how one Bay Area organization is creating a different sort of village to ensure that all children have the learning, health, and social supports they need to succeed in school and in life. The Oakland-based Partnership for Children and Youth began in 1997 when a group of concerned government, philanthropy, and business leaders joined forces to do something about the barriers to success that were faced by children and youth in low-income Bay Area communities. Their primary goal was to connect schools and their community partners in these underserved communities with available public and private resources. Also, they committed to improving the effectiveness of funding streams and services in general for low-income children. Jennifer Peck, our guest today, was a founding staff member of the partnership and has served as its executive director since 2003. In the past decade, Jennifer has developed and implemented initiatives to finance and build after-school and summer learning programs. Other initiatives have sought to increase access to school meals and nutrition education programs in the Bay Area's lowest-income communities. Under Jennifer's leadership, PCY has brought more than $90 million in public funding to schools and their community partners, enabling thousands of low-income children to participate in these programs. Jennifer, congratulations for those accomplishments and welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Really happy to be here.
Jennifer, the partnership has evolved over the years, focusing on food and nutrition initially, to then funding for education and more broadly to more educational opportunities outside of traditional learning venues. Can you tell us about that evolution?
Sure. We began when a group of regional leaders came together to look at the disparities in the Bay Area and really understanding that there were communities all across an otherwise well-off region that had these persistent, concentrated neighborhoods of poverty and how severely that was affecting kids growing up in those neighborhoods and the opportunities that they were missing out on. And then we began to look around at the available public resources to address some of the challenges these kids were facing. At the time, for example, there was an exponential growth in federal funding for after-school programs. There was a lot of growth in federal funding for school meal programs and breakfast programs, so kids would show up ready to learn. But what we found was that the schools in the neighborhoods with the highest concentrations of poverty that most needed these resources were totally disconnected from them. Either they didn't know about them, they had no capacity to apply for them. So there was a big disconnect between the growing resources and the kids they were intended to serve. So we were really created to bridge that gap and to eliminate that disconnect. So we came in and did a lot of work to make sure that the neighborhoods and communities most in need and the kids most in need had access to those resources and got those resources to the places they were really needed the most.
And are you pretty satisfied with where we are today?
Well, you know, I don't think we're ever totally satisfied, but we've made a lot of progress in that regard. I think awareness has been raised really well, not just through our work, but through a lot of partners' work. The number that you cited earlier around the $90 million that we've been able to raise for schools and community organizations, was a direct result of that early research that we did. We've done a lot of very targeted outreach to the schools serving the poorest communities to understand which grants and other dollars they're eligible for. We come in, we help them apply, we help them put programs together, we help them implement programs, and that has been extremely successful over the years.
So you've been assisting with the financing as well as improving and sustaining both after school and summer programs. Why are summer programs particularly important?
Well, summer is an issue we've learned a lot about in the last 4 or 5 years due to an emerging body of research demonstrating the severity of this thing we know of called summer learning loss. And summer learning loss is a phenomenon we've actually been aware of for about 100 years. And it's the phenomenon where kids, you know, when they're off school for the whole summer, if they're not engaged in some kind of learning activity, they forget a lot of things that they've learned in the school year, and they lose a lot of skills. And it makes perfect sense when you think about it. What the newer research is showing is a very strong link between these learning losses and the achievement gap between higher income children and lower income children. So we know that children in the very lowest income communities are suffering these learning losses in really, really devastating ways, and that it's accounting for dropout rates going up. It's accounting for a lot of remediation that needs to happen in the schools. And so, you know, the research really set off an alarm all around the country. So we decided to launch a campaign around this issue to make sure people really understood what was at stake for kids in the summer, and to try to build more programs, particularly for low-income children, so they can maintain their skills and their learning over the summer.
Some of the programs that you assist, Jennifer, are in low-income housing communities. Can you tell us more about the Affordable Housing Communities program and how your organization connects housing-based youth service providers to one another?
Yes, we love this project, and this project is directly comes from conversations and a relationship with Eden Housing, who really educated us about the opportunity of working with kids in low-income housing developments. California is actually very unique in the amount of resources that we put into after-school and summer programs, but none of those resources really get to housing communities. But we know that a large number of our lowest income kids are living in these settings. And so we really learned that we're missing a big opportunity if we're not working harder to provide really strong, impactful after school and summer programs to kids who live in low income housing. So we have developed a special training and professional development program for staff who are working with kids in housing. And it's directed to the folks who are the service providers, who are working hard every day to provide a range of services for residents, but in many cases didn't have any particular training in how to run after school and summer programs, how to develop learning goals for kids in those programs, how to develop links with the schools and set up homework help sessions and bring the parents in. And so we've discovered a lot of opportunity with this project to provide really, really strong professional development to folks who are working hard to do programs for kids in housing.
So those were some of the biggest obstacles that you've had to overcome in terms of dealing with children in low-income housing sites?
Well, I think, you know, the biggest obstacles we've seen to providing programming for kids in housing, number one is funding. You know, it's pretty tough to fund those kinds of programs. A vast majority of the dollars that we have in our state for after school and summer programs are directed to schools. And so financing these housing programs for kids is challenging. And I think Eden has done an amazing job of finding ways to provide programs during difficult times. But more of that needs to be done. And then I think the other ongoing challenge has been that I think staff who are working with kids in low-income housing have felt very isolated and haven't had the support and the resources they need to do those programs well. And, you know, just like with anything else, you know, we know very well that teachers in the classroom need ongoing training and professional development in order to do their jobs well. So do staff who are working with kids on a regular basis. And we want folks who are working with kids in housing to have those same professional development and training opportunities, and also to have a place where they can talk with their peers about what they're learning, the challenges they're facing, in order to strengthen what they're doing with kids.
Sure, and to share best practices.
Exactly.
Tell us about expanded learning spaces. What are they, and how do they help to address the unique barriers to learning and development that are faced by these kids in low-income or public housing?
Yeah, well, expanded learning is kind of a broad term to describe the kinds of learning opportunities you can provide to kids in the hours beyond the school day and beyond the school year. So this can be the before school hours, the after school hours, the summertime hours, the vacation hours. And expanded learning spaces can be at schools and a variety of community-based organizations and in housing. And it's a place where we can provide learning opportunities to kids in different ways than they're getting in school. And so to do projects with kids to reinforce their skills, to have it done by staff who connect to them in different ways than teachers might. And so there's a lot of opportunity in those hours to build academic skills, social skills, you know, provide a whole lot of experiences that kids, particularly in the lowest income communities, may not otherwise have access to or opportunities to participate in, whether it's field trips, art projects, you know, a wide variety of things. And it's things, if you think about it, that middle and higher income kids have access to as a matter of course by the extracurricular activities that they do. And we all know that those things reinforce a well-rounded learning experience and healthy development for kids. And so we really want to well utilize all those hours when kids aren't in school to be providing them with opportunities that they not only deserve to have, but also really reinforce their learning and development.
Makes total sense. What services does the partnership offer low-income housing communities?
Well, right now, we're offering training and professional development and coaching for staff who are working with kids in low-income housing. And we're doing that in kind of a professional learning community format where we bring staff from different housing agencies and different sites together on a regular basis to go through particular areas of content around how you work with kids on a regular basis in a way that is going to be impactful and get results. So we talk to them about setting learning goals, about behavior management, about homework help, about how to set a positive culture, about how to get kids involved in leadership roles, how to get parents engaged. There's a lot of content areas that we go through. And then we also do provide a space for these staff to come together and share with one another so they know they're not alone. And there's a lot of power in that kind of collaboration when peers are coming together and sharing and learning together. And I have to say, we've learned a lot from them as well. And we've been so impressed by the level of dedication of these folks who are working with kids every day in housing communities.
We love hearing success stories, and also nothing quite drives home the message like a particular anecdote. How have children's lives been changed as a result of participating in these expanded learning opportunities at affordable housing communities?
Oh, I think there's a lot of stories out there, but one I recall from one of the presentations that we had at the end of last year from one of the housing providers was about a child that she had in her program who was coming regularly, but was regularly kind of in a bad mood and not seeming excited about the program and didn't really want to be there. And it seemed like they were sort of being forced to be there. And the staff person, as a result of one of the workshops we provided, created an art project that the child ended up getting really, really excited about. And their whole sort of outlook changed, and the way this child participated changed, and ended up bringing the parent in for the very first time, which is something the staff had been working really, really hard to do and can often be very challenging given all the demands that parents have on them. And it really seemed to transform this child and this whole family's attitude about the program. And so the child started coming more regularly and participating in more activities. And that's exactly the kind of thing that we want to see happen.
In the introduction, I mentioned that the partnerships raised more than $90 million for expanded learning opportunities. Where does this funding come from?
That funding is primarily from state and federal sources that support after school and summer programs. So, you know, the federal 21st Century Community Learning Centers program, and then through the state, a program called the After School Education and Safety Program. Both are administered by the State Department of Education. Those are the largest sources of funds for these programs that we have in California.
California has, of course, experienced year after year of cuts to funding for public education. Have you seen a relationship between these cuts and the need for expanded learning services?
I would say yes and no. I mean, the need for these services has always been extraordinarily high. However, I think when the downturn in the economy happened in such a severe way for several years in a row, we saw more and more families dipping into poverty, and we saw more and more kids, you know, fall into the category of high poverty. And so more and more kids became eligible for these programs that are publicly funded. So yes, I mean, I would say need and demand has gone up. But I would also say all kids need these programs, you know, regardless of their income level. I would say, you know, our public responsibility is to make sure that the kids whose families can't afford it have access to it. And demand remains very high.
The partnership has had an influence on state policymakers. You've helped to pass legislation around summer learning opportunities. And I understand there's even an after-school division now within the California Department of Education. So what is next on your policy agenda?
Well, we have several big things on our policy agenda, but a couple I'll mention. One is that in 2014, we're planning to propose some big reforms to how California administers all of its after-school and summer program dollars, around $700 million worth of dollars that it gives out each year, with the intent of making those resources more flexible for communities to use, and really, really encouraging that these programs happen consistently in partnership with community-based organizations, including housing organizations. And related to that, we would love to see ultimately more resources go to programs serving kids in low-income housing. The fact is that even if we have large and robust after-school and summer programs at school sites, there's still going to be a lot of kids from housing who go home at the end of the day for a variety of reasons, whether it's safety or transportation or otherwise. So I think we really have to do a better job of finding ways through policy and public funding to make sure that kids living in housing have high quality programs where they live.
Let's move now to the partnership's influence on the federal level. Tell us about your work, Jennifer, with the Elementary Education and Secondary Education Act.
Yes, well, the large federal education law called the Elementary and Secondary Education Act is overdue for being reauthorized. And we've been working on a very specific aspect of that law that governs the after-school and summer program dollars, so the expanded learning dollars. And we have so far been pretty successful working with a collaborative of other organizations like ours from around the country in influencing the direction of that piece of the law. And, you know, just like our work at the state, we really want to build more flexibility into that funding so communities have more choices about what to do with the money. We also really want to make sure that in every case there are strong partnerships between schools and a whole range of community organizations, again, including housing organizations. And we also really want to make sure that there's enough resource and emphasis on training and professional development, because unless staff have what they need to do programs well and programs are high quality, then we're not going to get the results that we're looking for. So that's really been our emphasis with our federal work.
You're also leading a national coalition of program providers and advocates in promoting specific improvements to the 21st Century Community Learning Centers program. This is the primary federal funding stream for expanded learning programs for schools in low-income communities. What sort of improvements, Jennifer, does the coalition want to see?
Well, you know, it's the very same ones that I mentioned a moment ago. You know, we want to see more flexibility at the local level. We want to see strong training and professional development and resources for that. And we want to see strong language around the value of partnerships at the local level, you know, and making sure that schools and their partners are incentivized to plan programs together, to implement programs together, and to assess programs together, and really have there be kind of joint responsibility for the results of what we're doing with kids in those expanded learning hours.
As a developer and manager of low-income housing communities, Eden recognizes that having a safe, secure place to call home is a first step toward economic stability and opportunity. And then we partner with community-based organizations to offer educational and other programs to our residents. In the past year, we experienced massive cuts in financing for low-income housing when the state eliminated its funding for redevelopment agencies. So we, too, are forging new partnerships to try to underwrite the costs of new development. What additional opportunities do you see for affordable housing providers such as Eden Housing to work in partnership with the Partnership for Children and Youth?
Well, I think one of the things, and you know, we've discussed this with Eden a little bit, but I think there's a lot more joint policy and advocacy work we could be doing together with housing organizations. I think housing organizations and children's advocacy groups have a lot of potential goals and priorities in common that they could jointly do some advocacy work that could be very impactful if we were more intentional and assertive about that. And we've begun to talk about that with the housing organizations that we're working with currently, you know, to look ahead both at the local level, the state level, and the federal level about where we may be able to generate more resources for youth programs in housing.
Thanks so much for appearing on the podcast today, Jennifer. Can you share the URL for your organization should our listeners want to learn more?
Sure. You can find us at partnerforchildren.org. And we also have another website specifically around our summer campaign, which is summermatters2you.net. And that's the number two. And we have a lot of resources there to be shared around summer learning.
Excellent. Jennifer Peck, Executive Director of the Oakland-based Partnership for Children and Youth. I'm Joanne Green. To hear additional episodes of the Affordable Housing Podcast, we invite you to visit edenhousing.org.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.